Ah, my friends, welcome back to the unofficial Shopify podcast. Where's my sound effect? I'm your host, Kurt Elster.
Jack Nasty.
And today we are talking about a sustainable lifestyle brand of activewear that is run by a real deal entrepreneur. This is a bootstrap sustainable activewear brand that started on Kickstarter, was featured on The View, and then won Self Magazine's award for best of activewear. Okay, this sounds legit. This is cool. But genuinely bootstrapped by Mary Bemis, who, if you listen to, we had a past bonus episode about Shopify features, and one was Shopify Magic Media Editor, and that was Mary Bemis from Reprise Activewear. So joining us again to now tell us her story about how she got here, her journey, and the challenges along the way. Welcome to the show, Mary. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me back. It's great to get to have another conversation with you.
Yeah, after we recorded the bonus episode first, you know, and like I have to talk about the Shopify features, but you know, to me, it's like I've already used these. I know this. You know, I spend 8 to 10 hours a day in Shopify, and I'm like, no, we got to record a second episode because I need to hear your story. Like that's I get excited about that. So tell me about Reprise Activewear. What is it?
Yeah, so it is a line of plant-based activewear. And really what that means and sort of why I started the business was I learned that currently over 60% of clothing in the market is made with plastic-based materials that come from fossil fuels. But that number is actually probably closer to 95% of activewear. And really just I had a moment where I thought about sort of, you know, I'm eating better, I'm using clean beauty and personal care products, yet I'm wearing stuff that's still highly plastic and covered in chemicals. Shouldn't I find something that's more natural and made with natural materials? And to be honest, when I first started it 6 years ago, I couldn't find anything on the market. So I figured, you know, that's such a big need for something that's sort of cleaner, better for your skin, and really fits in with like the wellness practice. So we make everything from Tencel, which is a tree-based fabric. It's all non-toxic, breathable, and as plastic-free as possible.
So there was a larger trend going on in your life where you're like, I want to live a healthier life in general. And that manifested as like, I should be working out. I should eat better. And then that starts to extend to purchasing decisions, right? Where like, you know, and decisions just around, I think being more conscious about our choices. So was there... like, that's one thing, but is there a specific moment where you said, oh, I'm going to go start an activewear brand? Like, there's a big jump from I'm going to eat healthy to now I own an activewear brand.
Yeah, definitely. I'll say, you know, I always grew up in a very environmentally minded household. I grew up in Minnesota, and my family was always really conscious of I was actually like the kid that ran around and turned off of like the unused light bulbs and things like that. So it isn't a huge surprise. I sort of always had an environmental mind, and I always also grew up very active. I had three brothers, and so I did a lot of sports. I played hockey. I played on the boys' football team. I actually still compete in boxing and powerlifting. So I love to stay active and compete in sports. So those two parts of the, you know, venturing into a business around those two things are sort of no surprise to me, but I never thought I would actually start a company. I had a really interesting this moment that you're asking about. I actually was, I was in my mid-20s, so I was sort of young and having a pivot. I worked in finance previously, and I just got really burned out, to be honest, and I quit without any job lined up. It was sort of a moment where I was like, I've had it. I'm tired. I'm done. And like, I can't do this anymore. And so that break, I only had about 2 months of rent saved up. So I had to kind of make a decision sort of quickly. And that break really allowed me to look into, you know, if I'm going to change industries, what do I want to do? And what do I like? And what am I passionate about? And I think I went from this huge, large investment bank that was very corporate and very structured. And I just felt like, I kind of want to do my own thing. Like, I'm smart. I know what I want to do. I love, you know, I love learning. I love being active. And I actually had a moment where I was going through and cleaning out my closet. And that's when I learned that all my clothing was made with plastic. I was trying to resell it on this resale shopping app called Poshmark. And I was writing all the details. And I was like, what is polyester? It's in everything. But like, I don't even know what this fabric is. And when I Googled it, that's really when those stats that I listed at the top of the episode around, you know, 60% of clothing and 95% of activewear, that was like the light bulb moment of like, oh my God, I had no idea. And really just sort of, I watched documentaries, I went to night school, I just couldn't stop thinking about this fact and sort of felt like the more I learned, the more there was an opportunity. And so it wasn't a right away decision. It was more of like a let me learn more before I dive in. But the more I learned, the more I just became really passionate about the topic and sort of felt like there's a need here. And I'm now exploring this new sort of career path. And it just was a great timing of all those things together.
So let's go. You mentioned you grew up in Minnesota. You're more environmentally minded, you think. And so I get the interest here. Were there experiences, influences, peers that made you, that you think sparked your entrepreneurial spirit?
Absolutely. Yeah, my dad. When we were growing up, he worked more in the corporate space, so less than, he ran a business, but it wasn't necessarily something that he was passionate about and started. And then probably he was ahead of me, so maybe 10 years ago, he started a nonprofit. He's very involved in the like drug and alcohol rehabilitation space. And so he started an app for teens, early signs of substance use. It's an app to connect parents with teens, to have conversations, understand sort of why a teen might be choosing to drink or use substances for the first time. And so it's something he's incredibly passionate about, and he's helped a ton of people through this app. And so I think I just saw him, you know, following his passion and putting so much work into it. He was always working kind of nights and weekends. And it's funny because it was much later in his career, like in his late 60s, and he's just about to turn 70. But just seeing someone so dedicated to something that is a big part of his life, I think I was really inspired by that. And though we're working in very different fields, I think it was definitely impactful for me to see that and realize that that's an option for my path as well.
So, yeah, I think as a kid, the experiences that we gain or that parents can, you know, provide for kids, you know, often it's not about whether or not they could, you know, whatever the experience is, whether or not they can master it. It's just exposing them to the idea that this is a possibility. Like, this is a legitimate thing you could do. And so hopefully they internalize it, and later as adults, like you go, okay, this is a path that I could do. So you don't just deny yourself unknowingly. And so, you know, moving forward a little bit, what, you said you had to quit your job to get this going. But what was your background before starting Reprise Activewear?
Yeah, so I was a big math person in college. So I studied econ and I minored in math. And I really sort of always wanted to go and do finance. I wanted to do the New York Wall Street thing. I think I had a bit of a glamorized view of it, but I also just loved the work. Like, I loved working in Excel and with numbers and things like that. And I did it.
Well, you're a rare breed.
I know. It's like embarrassing to admit that still sometimes. But I enjoyed it for the first couple of years. But like I said, I just got really burned out. It was very, very long hours. And I wasn't enjoying it the way I thought. And I just felt like I kind of saw what the career path looked like and how those hours and stress kind of, they don't really go away. It's not like you put in a couple of years, and it gets better. And so I think that was just, like I said earlier, just a moment where I was like, I don't want this anymore. And it honestly led to a bit of a quarter life crisis at 25, which is when you just look back and was so much younger. But, I think really trying to understand what I wanted, and I ended up taking, and I actually have been working at a large ad agency on the analytics team for the past, it'll actually be 8 years in September, while I've built the business, and it's allowed me to continue to bootstrap the brand. But I pivoted over to like the analytics side. I could kind of keep that numerical and analytical mindset, but to pivot to a new industry. And they've been really great and supportive of me and the business. And ultimately, I would love to do my brand full time. But until then, it's been really great to be able to find time to do both. They've been really supportive, but it's allowed me to really build a business, hire people, do other things that wouldn't put such quite a financial burden on me.
Yeah, when you're bootstrapping, You know, you're building from scratch and you're not borrowing versus you buy a business and you borrow to do that, or you borrow to build the business and then you can move quicker, but you're also potentially digging yourself a hole very quickly. Some people are more risk averse. I am risk averse. I bootstrapping is what I prefer. But again, I'm not saying there's a wrong or right way. It's whatever works for you. And so in this case, I'm on board with your approach. Well, let's talk about the conception of the brand. It's like you saw the problem, you wanted something better for yourself, namely because a lot of clothes are nylon and polyester, which not sustainable fabrics at all. And so sweaty. Oh, polyester.
I know, it's tough because when you're...
I never want to wear polyester again.
Yeah, you get used to the breathable natural fabrics and you're like, wow, this actually is so much better to wear, especially it's almost 100 degrees in New York and humid today. And so you're like, what can I wear and not sweat? But I know now that I've gotten used to that feeling, putting on like a polyester pair of leggings just feels so constricting and not breathable. So it's funny that you get used to the other way, but I'm glad you know that.
Tell me about the story behind that initial conception of the brand. Like, when does Reprise Activewear come to life in your head?
So I am trying to remember, after I really started to learn about the fabrics and the issue, my actually biggest concern at the beginning was more of the microplastics issue, again, for more of the environmental side of things. When you wash clothing that's made with plastic-based fibers, tiny microscopic bits of plastic are getting into the environment. They've been found back in our water and back in our bodies as well. And so
microplastics.
Microplastics, yeah. So that was a big concern of mine. So I actually went to a fabric trade show. I can't remember who forwarded it to me or how I found out about it, but it's free to attend. It's twice a year in New York City in January and July. And I had a name of the brand. And so I applied to attend. I said I was attending under my brand, even though nothing about the brand existed. And it's amazing when you walk in. It's just, I mean, I don't know. I think it's amazing because it's like new to me and I've never had to go like as part of a job. I get to go for fun. But it's just this huge job at Center Convention of fabrics. And everywhere you look, there's beautiful beaded fabrics, you know, like natural fibers, really high performance things. And I just started talking to people, which is funny because I tend to be more on the introverted side. But I think I was just so excited about this idea and exploring something new and getting a chance to learn and do it on my own. And it's part of the sustainability sphere is sponsored by a company called Lensing. And they're the ones who own the trademark for the fabric that we use called Tencel. And they make a bunch of other really great, very sustainable fabric solutions. And they're based out of Austria. And I got speaking with them. And they were like, you know, Tencel is actually really great for activewear. It is very absorbent. It's resistant to odor and bacteria. It's antimicrobial. It's really, really, it always kind of feels cool to the touch, which I love when you touch one of our t-shirts. It sort of has that cooling feel naturally. And the more I learned about it, the more I was like, this is exactly the fabric I want to use. It's plant-based. It's clean. It's non-toxic. It's high performance. Why hasn't someone been using this before? I really couldn't understand that. And so that's really what got me, I found the fabric and then I started to go to our advertising office. My day job was actually across the street from the Fashion Institute of Technology, and they had night classes and they had one that was sustainable design entrepreneur, like a non-credit certificate program. And so I was going to night class from 6 to 9 p.m. four nights a week because I just was so excited to learn. And I learned all about more fabrics. I learned a lot about local production. We were in the garment district, so it was really great to learn from people who are producing locally in New York. Sustainable marketing and sort of how to market a sustainable product. Legal basics 101, things like that, really everything I needed. And I think the more I learned, the more I just got really excited to build this and sort of like, you know what, it's now or never. I really am ready to launch a brand. I have the ideas. You know, I work out a lot. I know the space. I met all these people who can kind of connect me with the people I need to know to do it, and I'm ready to take it on.
This episode is sponsored in part by Cleverific. Imagine freeing up hours of support time every week because your customers can manage their own order adjustments. That's what Cleverific makes possible. Cleverific gives customers the flexibility to add items, change shipping details, or even cancel their orders, all through a straightforward customer portal. And what it gives you is the peace of mind knowing your order process is smoother, your team is more efficient, and your customers are happier. Peter Manning New York, a prominent retailer, cut their order support queries by a staggering 99% after integrating Cleverific. And they're not alone. Remember, Cleverific not only reduces the number of support tickets, but also speeds up order processing and minimizes errors. Your customers handle their own simple changes, freeing up your team to focus on what really matters, growing your business. Sign up today at cleverific.com/unofficial and enjoy 50% off their pro plan when you use code unofficial50. It's just $49 a month for full access to every feature. Take action now with Cleverific to slash your customer support tickets, speed up order processing, and reduce returns. That's cleverific.com/unofficial. A big pivotal moment here was discovering Tencel at the Tencel or Lyocell is the generic version. I'm familiar with this fabric. It's like a techie sustainable fiber that's similar to rayon, but doesn't have the horrible manufacturing issues that rayon does. That's really cool.
Yeah, it was just one of those when I think you're on the right path, just things kind of fall into your lap like that. And it was just sort of one after the other. I was meeting people that they were like, I can connect you to a factory, or like this moment of meeting Lenzing Tencel representatives. It just was very cool. And I was very sort of motivated by those things all kind of falling into place.
Now that you've got that lined up, we still don't have a product. And we still have to launch the brand. What are those initial steps to launch Reprise?
Yeah. So I had met another person who was able to connect me with a pattern maker garment factory in Manhattan in the garment district. So it was really lucky because, again, it was very close to my office. So I would sort of sneak out during my lunch break and go meet with them. And I wanted to start with just a very basic sports bra and legging. I felt like, you know, keep it simple. But I did not know how to sketch, and I still don't. My artwork is terrible. And I didn't have a design background. So I actually just brought some of the pieces from other brands that I loved. And, you know, basic black legging, there's only so many ways you can design that. I knew what the waistband height was, and I knew the length that it wanted to be. And we went from there. And the sports bra, I tried to keep it really simple. And again, brought a couple of designs with me and told them, you know, I like the length of this one, I like the width of this one. And they just sort of went with it. We had to do a couple rounds of revisions because obviously that way of designing is very like a little bit of a game of telephone. But we ended up with, I ended up doing 5 different designs for the Kickstarter. And we launched with that. And then we launched with the crowdfunding campaign, and that allowed us to afford the first round of production. We worked with a different production facility, but it's in the Bronx in Manhattan. So I was able to so I was able to take the train up there and see them. And I still work with them to this day. And that was sort of how I learned, just asking for help, making connections with people. And I think working with people local, getting a chance to establish relationships, show them what you're doing. They get to meet you and hear the story. It's really helped me feel like I have a really strong supply chain. It's changed a lot now. We still work with some of the same partners. We have new partners as well. But it was something that I think was really important to me to like learn and see the process and be able to be there. There was a lot I didn't know. And so it was really helpful to be able to learn sort of while in person.
So your manufacturer is in New York with you?
Yeah. So we have one in the Bronx. And then we actually just pivoted to have our new manufacturing facility in Portugal. I really wanted to work with a European-based facility. It's women-owned, which is exciting, but they have very high standards for different sustainability metrics like chemical usage, water usage, and then labor standards. This one is just, they fit a lot of our sort of brand ethos, but I also still work with the factory in the Bronx as well. Not that they don't also have those things. It's just a very big component of the other factory. And it's nice to have someone local for some smaller designs that we do and test things. And he's been a great partner for the last 6 years as well.
That's really cool. So
yeah.
I found your Kickstarter. You know,
oh yeah.
Not exactly tough, but
on there.
Yeah. I just typed Kickstarter reprise as first thing. But okay. Most Kickstarters, it's like one item with variations or a couple items. You had a tank top, a t-shirt, a sports bra, and then it looks like shorts and leggings.
Yeah.
So five? You have five products. Five. And then those have to have sizes. I don't know if they had, it looks like they might have been different colors, or they were all black.
The bottoms were all black. The tops were all, or like some of the, yeah, it was just one option for color sizes. Yeah, you're hitting on the point.
There's a lot of SKUs here.
Yeah. That I think I learned a bit in hindsight, and someone who was advising me really gave me the advice, like, I really, really just start with two styles and keep it simple. But I felt just naively compelled to do at least a full set of things. And we actually, what's sort of funny is we ended up scaling back to just two of the products after the Kickstarter. Not that I didn't think all the products were great, but it was just a lot to manage and get feedback on that first round and look at all the SKUs and afford rounds of production for all these things. And so I realized, what are the two things that we're getting the best feedback on? And it really was just the sports bra and the leggings. And let's just keep growing from there with just those two. It's a lot easier to manage as a set that goes together. And we've expanded since over the past 2 years. But it's funny you noticed that, because that was something I was advised to do. I was a little headstrong and I went for it anyways and kind of learned the lesson after the fact.
You survived.
Yeah.
So once that Kickstarter was funded, what next, right? You got to fulfill those orders, but then you also got to keep it going.
Yeah, that was a really interesting pivot. The Kickstarter was amazing, and I recommend anyone who's interested with product. It's such a great way to build an audience and tell the story. I had people backing me from, I mean, I was reaching out to like anyone and everyone I could have ever met in my life. I was pretty set on having this happen. And so, but it was a lot of work. I was exhausted after those 30 days. So it's nice to have a little bit of time while the product was being made. We did have a bit extra. And so I made extra product, which was really nice. We had a little bit of extra fabric and extra product, so I could continue to sell with that. So I would take those to just anywhere and anywhere that would let me sell within the city. I would go to workout events or yoga studios, and just, I had like a traveling suitcase that I brought with me every weekend to just like places within New York that I could find that would let me just come and sell. And it was a lot of work, but that's sort of how we built the initial couple of years, was just showing up to lots of different kinds of events, mostly trying to find free ones that would let us do that, and working with it in like partnerships and things. But it was a lot of showing up and telling people sort of, what is the difference? What does plant-based even mean? Why are our products great? People want to get a chance to try them on. So that was really how we sort of continued to sell beyond friends and family post-Kickstarter.
I love that you did in-person events. That's been a recurring thing we've heard on the show. Early on, you know, advertising budget is expensive. Mm-hmm. Especially for a bootstrap brand, often prohibitively so. But in-person events are high impact, but you have to put in the time and show up. But they're low cost outside of the time investment. But more importantly, you get to talk to the customer face-to-face.
Yeah.
And it just, especially early on, getting that real-time feedback and reactions, I think ultimately, you end up honing your pitch, your messaging, your positioning, how you describe the product, because you know what questions people are asking. You know what the pushback is.
Oh,
did you
absolutely
have that experience?
Yeah, that was actually one of the biggest takeaways, other than just getting a chance to, like, some of our early customers who still buy from us now were people that I met at those events. I think, again, they just really connect and you find the right people. They understand the mission behind the brand. But one thing that was really interesting, I think I mentioned that at the beginning, I was very focused on the microplastic issue. For me, the biggest risk was more of the environmental side of non-sustainable fashion. So, you know, the oil usage and the shedding of microplastics into the environment, the high chemicals. And what's been super interesting is over the past year, actually, especially, has changed even more. But when I was testing that messaging, people were not giving me the response that I was hoping. A couple people, like people who shared a very a strong passion for the environment, but just not everyone there was, and no one wanted to feel guilted into buying something, you know, or that their other products were, you know, brands that they already owned were having contributing to an issue. So I really had to test that a lot and see what people resonated with. I found that instead of microplastic free, plant-based was really more interesting. People were like, what does that mean? What is my current clothing made out of? Is that better? Is it cleaner? So we were using that for a while. And then last year, the Center for Environmental Health came out with a study where it had tested many major activewear brands, all sort of big names that you'd be familiar with. And they found over 40 times the safe limit of BPA in these activewear brands because they're working with a plastic-based fabric. And that caused a huge shift in customer sentiment of really looking for non-toxic activewear. And so that's really sort of the messaging we lead with now, which is interesting because nothing has changed about the product. Our product has always used Tencel, which is non-toxic, and it carries a certain certifications that allow us to say that. But it was really interesting to finally see that shift and when it became about sort of what are we putting on our bodies and what is the risk there and the health implications of wearing stuff that's high chemical load. It's honestly helped the brand. We more than doubled last year and on track to do it again this year. And we don't spend any money on paid advertising. It's all just from sort of great media moments, really great product and word of mouth, and trying to really just meet people sort of what they're looking, the type of product they're looking for now. And it's been exciting to see for all these years, finally that shift is happening.
Yeah, it's been, I feel like this year is the first year where we see mainstream awareness and people questioning forever chemicals like BPA and the prevalence of microplastics in, at this point, everything, just straight up everything. So, well, I mean, it depresses me. So how, you mentioned, you know, you've got the media coverage. How do you end up on The View? That's a good media placement.
Yeah, so it was this daytime show called, CBS has a show called The Talk. But it's been cool. A couple of the media that we've gotten that I've been most proud of was actually just people that I've reached out to on like LinkedIn, or I would follow writers in the space and I would follow them on all social media looking for like any kind of connection. And actually one of my favorite stories that I just think is interesting to share, I had Google Alerts, so anything for sustainable fashion that would come up would be sent to my inbox once a sustainable activewear specifically would come once a week to my inbox. And I would look at sort of who's writing in the space, and I would make sure I was following them on, you know, every channel. And like I said, look for any kind of connection. And one editor who works for Well and Good had recently published a roundup of best leggings. And I really, Well and Good would be like a perfect publication for us. And so I was really excited. And I looked on her page, and the first thing that I saw was a picture of this girl, her and this girl that I went to college with. And I was like, no way. So I didn't know the girl very well, but I reached out to her on social media and I was like, do you know this girl, Allie? Like, I know this is kind of weird, but it looks like she writes for Well and Good. I have a sustainable leggings brand. I would love to meet her. I would love for her to write about us. And that's how we got sort of our first big feature in Well and Good. And that was just a funny, totally random moment, but I think it just took a lot of being really resourceful and scrappy and looking for kind of a connection anywhere.
Did you read a book with this advice? You figured this out, because what you're describing is a genuine PR strategy.
Yeah, I think I probably read articles. Like I said at the beginning, I was so excited to just learn. I probably read the strategy somewhere, or started to kind of pick up on like, yeah, how do you even connect and do it yourself? And then The Talk, the TV show, was actually just a random Instagram message. I actually thought it was spam. I got a message from one of the producers, was like, you know, hey, I'm one of the producers on The Talk. We're doing a big Earth Day special. And I saw it in the request folder, which usually you gets kind of missed because you don't follow someone. And he actually, I think, originally had commented on a post and was like, hey, it's, you know, so-and-so from The Talk. And I was like, this looks like spam. And then he wrote the message.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I was like, that's nice really buddy. Cool. It's like, you know, someone from, you know, Shark Tank reaching out or something. And I messaged him back. What's there to lose? You know, see if he responds back. And he did. And he actually ended up being totally legitimate. And so that was amazing. I actually still to this day don't know how, unless they just did searching on social media, how they found us. But it was so cool to see the brand on daytime TV for Earth Day. And that led to a huge I think our average monthly sales volume like tripled that month. So it was a really cool moment, but just kind of, I want to say pure luck, but I know there's a lot of work that goes into being discoverable and things like that. But yeah, we try to really keep it. We do now have someone that helps with PR, but for the first, until this year, it was a very, very bootstrap, resourceful, kind of scrappy effort along the lines of the story I told at the beginning. And I think it's possible. It just takes a lot of work.
Was that a pivotal moment in, you know, the early days of getting this brand growing? Or was there, what would you pick as like a pivotal inflection point where you went, yeah, this is going to work?
Oh man, there've been so many. I think the biggest one, honestly, was the Center for Environmental Health finding that study. It was the first time that we weren't having to go out. A lot of the brand, the work that we do is educating people. I'll say plant-based clothing, and so many people are like, what? You can make clothing from plants? And I'm like, well, cotton has existed for like thousands of years. So yes, but, and not to be facetious, but it's just funny, like we're so disconnected from it. And so there's always been a very long sort of educational process of finding new customers, like teaching them about the issues of plastic and polyester and nylon-based clothing, the chemicals and the things. And we always try to do it, again, like I said, in an uplifting way. I never want to like scare tactic people or overwhelm them. And so really trying to find ways to like educate on that. But when that study came out, there were so many people sharing that news and kind of talking about it and sharing brands, and they were looking for brands that they could share. And so that's actually how we got featured in Fast Company. I saw the article and I just reached out to the editor, cold email. And I said like, hey, this article is totally taking off. It's all over social media. Everyone's freaking out. I know a list of 6 brands, including ours, that are natural fiber based and clean and non-toxic. Would you be willing to do a follow-up article with, you know, these brands listed? So I actually did sort of a solid for all of our, like, I don't like to be like competitor, but like peer set of natural fiber activewear brands. And they posted a roundup. And so since then we've been featured in a ton of, you know, other people and like leaders and influencers in the space talking about clean brands. And so, yeah, I would say that moment was really such a shift in people like listening, because it wasn't just coming from the brands. Now it's coming from regulatory bodies. It's coming from influencers, news, press. Everyone's talking about it and looking for it. And that's when I'm like, this is the moment I've been waiting for after 6 years of trying really hard to kind of like manually make it happen. And like I said, the brand has totally taken off since then, and all naturally.
Do you think that's like the defining moment of your business success? You're like, this is it. This is the inflection point.
Yeah, so far. I mean, I hope there's more. We continue to grow, and I'd love to see another inflection point of a ton of growth continued. But so far, that's been the biggest one that's really made me feel like, you know, there were a lot of times before, it's tough, 6 years. And for the first 4 or 5, it was a very, very small bootstrapped effort. And there was no way it was going to become my full time. And I think I loved it. And so I stuck with it. But there were a lot of times where I'm like, is this worth doing it anymore? It's not really working. And I think ever since that moment, the momentum has picked up a lot, and it's given me a lot more sort of just like reinvigorated my hope that this is the next category and people really do are looking for cleaner and non-toxic products. The same way clean beauty became huge over the last few years, I believe that clean fashion is next. And so, yeah, that one definitely helped me realize like the timing is now, people are looking for it. We put in all this work, we have great product, we have our partners, we're ready for it. So it was an exciting one.
Did you know that most Shopify stores are leaving 10 to 20% of their revenue on the table with every single purchase? Each year, Shopify merchants make New Year's resolutions to increase profits, but they overlook one crucial aspect: maximizing every order with upsells. That's like breaking your promise on day one. But you could turn that resolution into reality with Zipify One-Click Upsell. One-click upsell is this secret weapon Shopify merchants are using to unlock extra revenue on every single sale. I've seen this app transform stores, doubling their revenue. In fact, one-click upsell has already helped merchants like you make $500 million in extra upsell revenue for your stores. Zipify OCU is the original Shopify upsell app, and it's been boosting AOV, that's average order value, since 2016, thanks to its seamless integration and intuitive upsell funnels. With the most upsell placements, AI-driven copy suggestions, and mobile-friendly designs, it's no surprise that the average OCU user increases revenue 10 to 15% as soon as they set up the app. The new year brings new opportunities, my friend. So start your 2024 strong with the app that makes your revenue goals a reality. Zipify one-click upsell. Go to zipify.com/Kurt and start your 30-day free trial today. That's zipify.com/KURT to try Zipify one-click upsell for free. Don't just make resolutions, make profits. Add Zipify one-click upsell today and kick off the new year with a lot more sales. You reprise having won awards, having been featured on major platforms. You always want those things, right? They're great. It's visibility, it's PR, it's traffic. That means sales. But do you internalize them? Do they mean anything to you?
They do. So it's such a small brand still, and it really is mostly just the team is just me. I have two amazing marketing coordinators who do our social media and email. They're both students studying fashion and design, so they've been incredible and they've taught me a lot. And then a fractional CFO who helps me keep the book straight, which is always one of the hardest parts. But so those wins are still so huge to us because it's like, it's such a small team and we all made that happen. I actually until this week, so it's kind of an exciting week for me, handled all of the fulfillment. We just opened up with a fulfillment center for the very first time. So I'm like, couldn't be more excited, but I would literally, every order was, I would go to a storage unit because my very small studio apartment in New York couldn't hold the product. And I would pack up and ship and walk to the post office every single order. And so I think things like that, they do mean a lot, but it was always like this double-edged sort of like, with success and growth comes more work for a small team. And so not to say I wasn't always excited, but it was always a little bit of a like, you know, okay, we got to get ready for this. Like, this is exciting, but it's going to put a lot of, just a lot of work on it. But I still loved seeing orders come in. I still do, getting to pack them up and have that connection. And I'm just excited to expand with this new partner and be able to, I think, hopefully reach more people with some of that time back of being able to scale with a fulfillment partner. So it's been an exciting week to kind of get all that set up and see some of that time back so we can continue to grow the brand and reach more people.
And obviously, yeah, Reprise Activewear is on Shopify. When did that happen? What was that decision like?
That was an easy one. I did that right after the Kickstarter. There's a company called BackerKit that allowed us to continue to collect orders while we were getting the products made. It was just sort of an easy transition while I built the Shopify site. I did everything for Shopify. I had a pre-built template and just kind of put our colors and sort of started from there. It was Square or Shopify were really the two I was considering. And everyone had just said for e-commerce capabilities, Shopify is sort of a no-brainer. So that decision was easy and they made it so easy to get set up. There's tons of help articles and communities you can turn to. And I've continued to think that it's sort of the best option out there.
I would agree, but I'm slightly biased. We've heard about your challenges. We've heard about your successes. I want to hear about how you messed up. Give me a story about a total fail, a setback, and you're still here, how you overcame it.
Oh man, there's so many that come to mind in terms of like, I think the biggest one was I had decided I wanted to work with a new manufacturing partner. There was another local one in New Jersey that was women owned, and I had connected with one of the investors in it, and I love this idea of supporting women-owned factories. We didn't really have an issue with our current one, but I wanted to partner with this new person. I had really, you know, enjoyed meeting them. And so I was working with them for about a year. And then it turns out they were sort of a tech company with manufacturing on the side. They were more like supply chain logistics and a plug-in tech component so you could really understand and track sort of where your product was in the life cycle. And they decided to pivot. They said they're not making money from the manufacturing, the cut and sew side, who actually is. And they didn't want to do that business anymore. So instead, they referred me to their in-house pattern maker. He and his wife were going to open up the factory and continue to work with all the clients that were sort of now being left behind when they made this pivot. So I said, okay, I'll go ahead and work with him too. I now know him through, you know, the year that we've worked together. And I'll move with him. That's fine. I had an order coming in. So, and again, I'm still working full time. I'm kind of, sometimes it's like, whatever the easiest path forward is, it just, let's just go ahead. And I ended up working with him and he said, okay, like we have your fabric, we'll get started on it and we'll be in touch in 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks. 6 weeks come and I'm checking in on the orders, and we always do pre-orders because as a small brand, it really helps with gauging demand and cash flow and things like that. And, you know, I'm checking in with him and he's like, kind of starts to avoid my calls. And I'm like starting to get nervous and I'm calling a bunch and calling a bunch. He's like, one more week. We're almost there, but one more week. I'm like, okay. And so one more week goes, and then he is shipping me two of the finished goods, just two pairs of leggings.
Oh,
and
boy.
They arrived to me and the quality was not good. It was so bad. And the samples I had seen were fine. So this was like, I started to get really worried. And he's like, we'll come deliver to you five more of them tomorrow. I'm like, five more? What are you doing all day? Like, this is really concerning. And so he did. And I couldn't sell them. I was like, this isn't going to work. And so I was like, what stage is everything else in? Like, what's happening? I'm super confused. This is the first, it's like now we're 2 weeks late. This is the first that I've heard that nothing was even done. So he kind of avoided me and I decided I'm going to go there. Like, I need to go see what's going on. And so I took the path to the bus to an Uber because I just couldn't afford like an Uber all the way from the city. It was like $300 or something. It was like kind of in a random part of New Jersey. And I showed up to the factory unannounced. And this was like very, very factory centric part of town. It was like warehouses and things. I think I showed up and they were all like, who is this? And what is she doing here? And I went to go see the things and everything. I am so thankful, but everything was just cut. It wasn't sewn. So I actually ended up just taking everything with me. I said, that's it. I'm done. Like, I don't want you to touch it actually, because the sewing was so bad. I'm taking all of the cut pieces with me. It's like all the puzzle pieces of like individual leggings. I put them in the back of an Uber and I took them home with me. And, I took them to my other factory in the Bronx, and he was a huge savior and was able to sew everything and finish the order. But I actually ended up losing all the money that I had paid that factory. They require, you know, 50% upfront. I had paid that and I never got it back. And, you know, it was like $6,000 or $7,000, which for a small bootstrap brand was like everything I had in the bank. And that was really stressful. And I ended up trying to get it back and I put him on a payment plan and I eventually had to get a lawyer involved. But he was so behind because nothing had been done that, you know, he couldn't pay. And I literally was, this is always a funny story. My friends love that. I was, you know, he had all this factory equipment. They decided they had to close down the factory. They obviously that didn't work. And he was like, you know, I don't have any money to pay you back, but if we can sell the factory equipment, that, you know, that's some money back. And so I was, had him send me photos and I was listing them on Craigslist to try at least like help him sell the thing so I could get some money back. And it didn't work. And I had to eventually just have it as a loss. And it took a while to rebuild because I just didn't have the cash flow that I thought I would. And it took a lot longer to make the product. So that was a really tough moment. I think we, for the next 6 months, just, we put things on sale to try to make money. I had to put some personal money in, but realizing like, it's really hard to work with new suppliers and you can't just kind of, you need to do your vetting and make sure you're working with it. And, you know, I'd already had a great person going and I loved what this woman is building, but it was a lesson in like really valuing your supply chain and doing your due diligence and making sure you're working with the right people. And losing that money was, it really, really affected us for a couple months. And I had to, you know, cut back so I could put more into the business personally. And so, yeah, that was an interesting lesson, just kind of a crazy story. But I think just, yeah, making the wrong partner.
You were able to pull out of it and save it, which is great. And again, it was just by literally showing up and trying to work it out. But this whole time, you're also working a full-time job during this. How do you balance reprise, especially when you're dealing with stuff like this, while working a full-time job?
That was really hard. You know, I will say that they have been incredibly supportive. Not that I'm not, you know, I'm there working 9 to 5 every day. I found that I do a lot of great work in the morning. So usually I'll wake up, you know, 2 hours before I need to be in the office and I'm sending out emails and trying to get organized and figure out what I need to do during the day. And then it's a lot of like nights and weekends. And I think I'm just really passionate about it. And it's gotten harder. I'm now in my mid-30s and I'm like, you know, this is a lot of work. I don't know if I can do two full-time jobs forever, but that was hard. I think there were days where I just would say I'm leaving early. I think that specific day I took a sick day for half the day, and I had gone from work when I realized this is what was happening, and you know, just having to balance the time. But now having team members to be able to help out with some of that work, it's allowed me to stay working in my job so I can afford to hire other people. And that's another reason sort of why I've continued to stay until I really feel like, you know, we have people doing things that I like. My strengths are not social media and not like financial planning and budgeting. And so that's where I chose to sort of hire those people that the business could afford before trying to go all in and cover, you know, expenses. Living in New York are high, and really trying to figure out sort of what that can look like for me to do it full time, which I think is very soon. But yeah, it's been a balance, but I think finding, you can't do it all. We're a small brand, just learning, you know, you're doing as much as you can. And we're trying to really prioritize the most meaningful projects and partnerships, just given that constraint on time and space, until we grow and can do it full time or have more people working with us.
And your entire journey, this entire discussion, has been such great advice for entrepreneurs who are looking to start something and, you know, very likely bootstrap it, because I think that's going to be the majority of folks. Yeah. And so for you, hindsight being 2020, what advice would you give to other aspiring entrepreneurs who are at the start of their journey?
Oh, I always say to do it. I think it's been one of the most fruitful experiences the past 6 years. You grow so much as a person, how much you learn, like all these situations I described today. I jumped in so naively. I never thought that those would be experiences that I would have, but you figure out sort of how to navigate, how to problem solve, how to learn new technology, how to communicate with new people. Your network is greatly expands just with all these new, you know, you need email marketing, you need advisors, you need production, and you meet a ton of cool people. And I think not every brand needs to be in the millions of dollars. If you just want to learn and do it and have, you know, a couple hundred thousand in revenue or whatever it is, just as a passion project, that still can be a success. I think a lot of people get hold back because they're like, you know, I need to go raise venture money, but I couldn't do it, and I need to do. And sort of what you had mentioned, like, I'm not of that mindset as well. And I think there's so much you can do kind of bootstrapping in and learning on your own and being smart and being resourceful. And even if you only do it for 2 or 3 years and you decide not to do it anymore after those 2 or 3 years, you're going to learn and grow a ton. And that alone is, I think, always worth it. So I always recommend to do it if you have it in your mind too.
You know, I've asked variations on that question dozens of times, and that's one of my favorite answers. Because your advice was like, whether or not you're going to succeed doesn't matter. If you want to do it, because you will not regret the sheer number of skills you gain in the process.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. That's cool. All right, so what's next for Reprise Activewear? Where do we go from here?
Yeah, well, we actually just had a really exciting product launch yesterday. There was a new sports bra style that we launched with, and we're working on a really exciting new line for September. It will be one of the very first lines of fully biodegradable performance activewear. And so that means that you could essentially go and compost it, and it will biodegrade within 5 years, where normally polyester takes in the hundreds of years to biodegrade. So it won't biodegrade on your skin. It has to be in the right conditions, but I'm really excited about sort of having a more high performance, but same non-toxic, sustainable line. So always working on innovating. The material innovation space is my favorite. And if you are interested, you can follow it on our, we're heavy on Instagram at Reprise Activewear.
I mean, just Google it, Reprise Activewear, but I'll include the links in the show notes. And Mary, where can people go to learn more about you?
Yeah, I also post a lot on Instagram. I try to share a lot of behind the scenes of building the brand. And so I'm at Mary B 612. I have my Minnesota roots still in my, can't ever escape it.
I will include that one in the show notes as well. Thank you so much, Mary Bemis, founder of Reprise Activewear. And man, you did it. You bootstrapped a successful, sustainable apparel brand. How many people can say that?
Oh man, I know. It's really a different journey than I thought, but I appreciate that. That makes me excited, and I feel like we're just getting started. There's a lot more I want to do with it. So it feels really great to be where we're at, but I also see such a bigger future for us. So we'll have to stay tuned. Hopefully more to come.
We'll end it there. Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.